or many of our other fine radio programs here at 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
What do you love about the Dearborn homecoming?
I love seeing all the classic cars.
My kids and I just love all the wacky contests and the carnival rides and all the fun stuff.
I come to check out all the great music acts.
Wow, I really enjoy coming here looking at all the art from all the great vendors.
Oh, the food is so great here!
Come join 89.3 WHFR.FM and all the fun of Dearborn Homecoming 2010 on August 6th through the 8th, where we will be broadcasting live and making waves from Ford Field. There is something for everyone.
We love Dearborn Homecoming!
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Henry Ford Community College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You are now going to be thrilled to have the pleasure of listening to our one-hour talk show called Impact. I am Kristen Risbeck. I am your host for this next hour from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. And Impact is a public affairs talk program, which usually I host an organization that is out there that's nonprofit, and they're working usually with the general public, I guess, is the best way to put it. Their services are being used for that purpose. Well, today, I'm going to be talking with the Michigan Nonprofit Association. The Michigan Nonprofit Association helps other nonprofits. And with me today on the phone, I have Mr. Kyle Caldwell, who is the president and CEO of the Michigan Nonprofit Association, to let us know a little bit about what's going on out there. Mr. Caldwell, thank you so much for joining us.
Kristen, thank you.
Well, I guess basically what we can just do is start off with the history of the Michigan Nonprofit Association. How long has it been around?
Well, we're celebrating 20 years.
Awesome.
And, the Michigan Nonprofit Association is really concerned with helping strengthen nonprofits and the nonprofit sector generally in our state. We are a thriving part of the not only the Michigan landscape, but the Michigan economy. And nonprofits touch everyone's life. And we think that it's important that we look at how the nonprofit sector can really be helpful in these challenging times that Michigan's going through. M&A has a, as I mentioned, 20-year history of helping nonprofits. We work on areas including training, technical assistance, public policy. We are also engaged in promoting civic engagement and getting volunteers out into communities working with nonprofits to solve some of our most challenging local problems. And the nonprofit sector itself is a growing, robust part of our Michigan economy. It's growing. In the last year, we've seen 2.7% economic growth in the nonprofit sector when the rest of Michigan is shrinking, and we are a major employer. Depending on the indices you look at, we're third or fourth largest employer in the state of Michigan. So we're really delighted to be part of this program to kind of talk about the great things that nonprofits are doing in Michigan.
Excellent. Let's talk about that a little bit, the Michigan's nonprofit sector here based on the their economic impact. I pulled a little bit of information off of your website, and it's a big industry.
It is.
I don't think people look at nonprofits as an industry. Is that maybe a problem that the nonprofit industry has?
Well, you know, you bring up a great point. Just the label, right? I mean, when you talk about nonprofit, it really doesn't explain the work that local charities do. And it impacts human services, providing child care programs to children who are latchkey kids. It provides health care to those who are ill or need assistance. We provide housing. We provide education programs. We are involved in providing environmental programming, public safety programming. The nonprofit sector is a major component of our life. When we look at any individual's experience, you're going to touch you're going to be touched by a nonprofit. Whether you're going through the K-12 school system, you could have been part of the Big Brothers Big Sisters program,
or the PTA.
absolutely. You could, be at the Henry Ford Museum, learning about the rich history of our state. You could be involved in Henry Ford Health System, right? Nonprofit healthcare provider.
A lot of people, I don't think, realize that a lot of the healthcare facilities out there are nonprofits. Would you be able to give kind of an overview of how that works? Because most people, they have their appointment. They're like, oh, I got to pay this, I got to pay that, and we got how does that work as far as a healthcare system being a nonprofit?
Well, Michigan is unique among states in that the major healthcare providers, emergency hospital, emergency rooms, hospitals, major healthcare, are nonprofits. They are governed as charities for the benefit of the community they serve. They're overseen by a board, a volunteer board, who provides guidance and oversight. The proceeds of any fee that they're able to charge goes rolling back into the work of the hospital. We only have one major now for-profit healthcare institution. That's the DMC, which just went through a sale with Vanguard. And the DMC is a teaching hospital, so it's mm-hmm. tied to another nonprofit, higher education, with Wayne State University. So when people, are provided major healthcare in institutions across the state, they are largely being served by a nonprofit.
Okay, and the healthcare industry actually happens to be one of those industries that is growing right now in this economy.
Absolutely. When we look at the two growth areas in the nonprofit sector, it's healthcare and education. So heads and beds, essentially, is what how we headline it. And if you think about the demographics of the population, not only in Michigan but across the country, we are seeing the baby boomers come into a part of their life where they're going to need increasingly more healthcare services. But at the same time, we know that if Michigan's economy is going to turn and that we're going to diversify, the way you do that, if you look at other states that have been successful, is to provide great educational opportunities, getting an educated workforce. And the higher education institutions across the state are largely either nonprofit or public institutions. So that it is the two really growing parts of our nonprofit sector.
Okay. And we have a lot of money being spent and generated through these nonprofits. According to your website, nonprofits generate more than $108 billion each year in overall economic activity. How does that all translate? Where is it going? Where is it coming from?
Right. Well, the economic activity that nonprofits generate comes from not only charitable donations to nonprofits and their partnership with government and providing fee services the government can no longer provide, and being paid a fee for that work, individual giving, corporate sponsorships, all of those income are not necessarily the full measure of the number that you just quoted. That number represents the buying power of nonprofits when they do business. They're buying products and services in communities. They're hiring people, paying payroll. Those people, in turn, buy products and services in local communities. So when you look at being the third or fourth major employer and then a large consumer of locally manufactured services and goods, nonprofits really are an economic engine. And so it's not just the charitable giving going directly to provide the service, but the multiplier effect of a nonprofit actually doing business in communities that generates that larger economic impact.
Okay. So what has happened to the nonprofit sector throughout this whole downturn that's going on? Where have they gone from, 2006 till now?
Yeah, great question. We have largely been impacted like everyone else. Since 2006, 2007, we have seen a steady rise in needs, from especially in Michigan, from local communities. When we look at the foreclosure rate, that's been skyrocketing, frankly. Until recently, we were number one. Now Nevada has eclipsed us there. We were number one in employment until recently. Those factors really increase the needs in communities. People need more and more of the services that nonprofits provide, whether it's income assistance, child care assistance, senior care assistance. And so nonprofits have seen needs skyrocket. At the same time, individual giving, because the people who used to be givers are now clients of nonprofits as opposed to donors of nonprofits. So you get a double whammy there. You don't get the charitable giving that you used to have, and at the same time, that same giver is now relying on the services that you provide. And we're also seeing that there's a really strong decline in the ability of for-profit corporations to contribute to nonprofits in the same way that they used to. So unlike other industries where if your customer was saying, I need more of you, and your need goes up and your product delivery goes up, you can charge more and you can receive a higher profit. Nonprofits, quite the opposite. Need goes up, charitable giving goes down, you've got a larger and larger gap. So nonprofits have seen a huge increase in need and at the same time a rapid decline in resources, and they're trying to find more and more creative ways to meet that gap.
So when that gap happens, what do they do? I mean, is the government at all stepping up? Do government entities recognize the fact that these nonprofits are needed but need more money?
Well, I think they're challenged. You know, nonprofits are probably not in a dissimilar position that local municipalities are. Local government is trying to meet the needs of their communities, and their tax base is not growing either because of the housing market going down, or because they're losing workers, or because the profit sharing that they used to get from state government is going down. And at the same time, they've got fixed costs. You know, healthcare needs of their employees are going up. So they're stretched. And the normal partnership that you see between local government providing the resources that support the work that nonprofits now do, that government used to do, is largely shrinking. And so the need has not gone away. Everyone's depending on government and nonprofits to provide the services, and the resource pool is largely shrinking. So while there was this little short-term uptick with the stimulus dollars that came from the federal government, that was really not a fix, and it certainly wasn't a cure to the structural deficit that we're having in Michigan that's really applying a lot of pressure. So government and nonprofits, especially at the local level, are really in the same boat.
So where are they going to go from here? What do you see happening in the next year or two?
I think, like everything else in Michigan, you're going to see more and more agility among nonprofits and them finding ways to adapt to the current climate. And adaptation means finding a better, more efficient way to deliver service. finding other alliances and partnerships with other organizations perhaps doing similar work in a similar area and consolidating services or merging. And we're also finding that nonprofits are finding other ways to mine resources. And, you know, there is still this large transfer of individual wealth that is out there that's going to occur from one generation to another that many organizations have largely not figured out how to tap. And that's about relationship building and about really helping people understand what you do so that they can figure out if they want to be a smart consumer and invest in you. And you got to find other ways to reach out to people. What we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years with social media and the way that people really want to connect electronically as opposed to always face-to-face, nonprofits are figuring out how they adapt.
Do you see many nonprofits not making it? I mean, presently, I believe there's close to about what I have here, 47,000
registered nonprofits
right. in Michigan. Yeah. Do you see a decline in them without them being able to hang on?
We've actually not. Unfortunately, the data isn't always as current as we'd like it to be because of the process that we go through on how nonprofits are licensed in Michigan and the steps you have to go through. So oftentimes what you'll see is an individual or a group of individuals getting a great idea, and they say, well, geez, you know, I want to do this. I'll just open up a nonprofit, and I'll do this work through my own nonprofit. And they'll go through and put the paperwork together and do the work, not realizing that there's probably a nonprofit organization in their neighborhood or in their region who might be doing similar work that they could partner with rather than creating a new nonprofit. So I think what we're seeing is as people are coming out of the for-profit job market and as more and more people are seeing the need, that the increasing need that's out there, whether it's helping children, helping pets, helping people transfer from you know, their housing crisis to more stable living environment. Everybody's seeing a need that they can fill, and they think starting a charity is the way to go. And so we're actually seeing an increase in the number of nonprofits over the last couple years. That doesn't mean that we're seeing an increase in revenue or an increase in need fulfillment, but we know that there are more nonprofits out there. So what we're doing oftentimes is telling people, before you start a nonprofit, look around, engage us, help us help you figure out if there's someone else doing the work before you go through the process of starting a nonprofit.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm Kristen Risbeck. This is Impact, a public affairs talk program where we are talking with Mr. Kyle Caldwell, who is president and CEO of the Michigan Nonprofit Association. And you were mentioning there that to start, if you thought about starting a nonprofit, look around first. How does one start a nonprofit in the state of Michigan? What are the steps?
Well, it's pretty easy. We have a tool on our website at mnaonline.org that walks people through the steps of how to start a nonprofit. And what we encourage people to do first is really think hard about what it is you're trying to do. And again, talk first, engage, volunteer in your neighborhood, volunteer in the causes that you're passionate about. Really look at the different ways that you would like to have a positive impact. If there's not one, you know, really contact us or contact your local United Way or some of the other organizations that support other nonprofits in your community and find out from them if there is a way that you can be helpful in an existing structure. And then after that, there's just some real basics. After you've brought people together, you've done some research, you determine whether or not you really meet the needs of a community and that you think a nonprofit charity will be the organization that can meet the gaps in service in your community. There's an online tool with the IRS and the State of Michigan Bureau of Commercial Services Corporation that you go through and fill out the paperwork and bring your board together, hold your board elections and your first meeting, and really put the structures in place to codify a nonprofit. Then there's the really important work of actually running an effective nonprofit. And a nonprofit, while it may be easy to register, it's it's much more difficult to operate one effectively, efficiently, and to really be transparent in your work. And we really encourage people to really think hard about what it takes to be a good, effective nonprofit, because for the sector, one nonprofit that doesn't perform well impacts the entire community.
And on that note, let's say you're looking around in your community and there is a nonprofit already out there that does what you want to do, but it's being very poorly run. And, or you don't, you know, it seems more, I hate to say this, but cliquish. You know, some organizations start having a certain core group of people and that's all they want to do. What can you do? Do you just start your own other nonprofit, or are there ways to approach that nonprofit?
Well, I think there's a lot of different ways to approach a nonprofit that might be appear to be operating with a closed environment, right? And I think starting another nonprofit just because you can't perhaps initially get as deeply involved with an existing nonprofit as you'd like really provides only competition for resources that are scarce to begin with and doesn't effectively get to meeting local needs. If you have three or four nonprofits that have been started up to do the same thing, you're splitting your donor base, you're diluting your customer base as far as need fulfillment, you're probably putting in redundant structures very inefficiently, and you're confusing not only the community, but your donors and others who might be volunteers for your organization. So starting another one in competition is probably not the most effective method going forward. First, we always tell people, volunteer with the cause that you're interested in. If you can't volunteer immediately, there are a number of organizations across the state of Michigan that actually match up a nonprofit with an individual. They're called volunteer centers. And we are lucky in Michigan. We have over 30 volunteer centers all across our state. We have a highly effective network of nonprofits that work with those volunteer centers. They identify their needs. The volunteer center matches either electronically or face-to-face a volunteer with the nonprofit that needs them and really works through that system to help a volunteer really transfer their passion to action. And we're really blessed that even in Southeast Michigan, where you've got well over 2 million people, that we've got a great partner in the United Way of Southeast Michigan that has a volunteer center within the organization. And they work hard to make sure that they've really moved their mission to engage volunteers from all across Oakland, Macomb, and Wayne County.
Now, if you, how should I put this? If you want to start a nonprofit, you know, you've done all these things. You've volunteered, you've looked for other resources, but you've decided, okay, this isn't out there. I need to do this. You go through, you fill out the paperwork, but it's not the same as just starting up a business. You have to basically have a board. How many people do you need to have sitting on this board? And then how do you have to hire a, you know, a president and then secretary and all that? How does that come together?
Well, really, Kristen, you've nailed it right on the head. That it takes more than just having a good idea to run a good charity. And again, in the in our website, starting a nonprofit, it walks you through just the board governance issues that you have to think about. But then you've got the really hard work, right, of bringing people together to actually do the work, whether they're volunteers or paid staff. And we provide another tool on our website to help nonprofit boards and leaders understand how best to manage their nonprofit. And the tool that we provided is called Principles and Practices. And this provides your organization, if you decide to start a nonprofit, with all the basic tools that you need to not only run a nonprofit, but run a nonprofit with excellent standards. It gives you a basic infrastructure checklist that walks you through the questions that you just asked. It gives you the curriculum that you can go to say, okay, if I'm a little deficient in my volunteer recruitment, or maybe I haven't really figured out how to do my audit correctly, or how have I really done my evaluation and have I really thought through whether or not my organization should be involved in public policy and civic engagement. The basic infrastructure checklist helps you figure out the answers to those questions. And so we give people those tools. And another one we give them, which is really important in this era of high scrutiny, need for transparency, and frankly, government suspicion on some of the work of some nonprofits, because we've had some bad actors, we provide a code of ethics and some risk management tools for nonprofits to really look, how do you put those safety features in place so that you're certain that you're running a high accountable and transparent organization. And I think for anything else that I say today, nothing's more important than emphasizing to nonprofit leaders and to individuals that are thinking about becoming nonprofit leaders that transparency and accountability really are the gold standard for our work. And while delivering services effectively is important, if we can't do it in a transparent and really high ethical way, we do harm to the rest of the nonprofit sector that we serve.
And you also have another resource on your site called Staying Legal.
It's a great tool. This is something we're extremely proud of. It's an online tool that helps you look at not only the state but the federal regulations that you have to comply with in order to operate a nonprofit. The tool gives you everything you need to get to the forms that are available. It walks you through some of the questions that you need to ask yourself. It helps you figure out, let's say you're trying to figure out audit questions with regard to your organization, and do I really need to have an A133 single audit that really is for those organizations that receive federal funds at a certain limit? Go on to the Staying Legal website, queue up to the question, you'll get the answer, and you'll get the IRS regulation that stipulates how you comply with that particular standard of the IRS code. So what's really interesting about the Staying Legal, we didn't create a whole nother set of tools for people to go to. What we gave you is the hub that gets you to all the other publicly available resources.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm Kristen Risbeck, your host of Impact, which is a public affairs talk program featuring nonprofit organizations, events, and people who are trying to make a positive change in our communities and around the world. I have been speaking with Mr. Kyle Caldwell, who is president and CEO of Michigan Nonprofit Association. Speaking of governments and federal regulations, state regulations that nonprofits have to deal with, you also have, through your website, you can sign up to get advocacy alerts.
Absolutely. You know, one of the core values that we hold dear in the nonprofit sector is that we really are a part of Michigan that speaks to the needs of individuals and communities, and that one of the important ways that we do that is to make sure that we have good, solid decision makers who impact our standard of living and make decisions for us every day of the week. In addition, we think it's vitally important that the nonprofits that we work with and that nonprofits that are engaged in really good work in communities at the local level all across the state engage policymakers in their work so that the decision makers can understand how their decisions impact local communities and impact nonprofits. So we believe that public policy and advocacy and telling our story is really important to our work, and that decision makers need to understand not only how we can be helpful, but how their decisions impact our work. So we created a number of tools around public policy and advocacy, including an action center that allows you to go online, give us your email address, and we'll tell you on a regular basis the public policy issues that might be affecting our work, not only in human services, in the arts, and in environmental organizations, but also just the broader sector. We also provide tools that you can use as a nonprofit to understand what are your rights as a nonprofit. Can you lobby? If so, how? What are the election year rules that you need to think about? Because there are rules that apply to nonprofits that don't apply to other parts of our society because of our charitable status. And so getting smart on those rules, understanding what our statewide tools are as an advocate, and then also thinking about what are the benefits in joining your fellow members in voicing your opinions to the nonprofit sector. We're also really, really pleased that the Michigan legislature has stepped up and created a nonprofit caucus. And this is 73 members of the House and Senate of Michigan who have come together to say, we believe that the nonprofit sector is a vital component to a Michigan economy, to the standard of life that we want to promote now and in the future. This caucus is led by two members of the House, two members of the Senate, Senator Jansen and Senator Hanson Clark, and then also in the House, Rashida Tlaib and John Prose. And these four leaders have led this over 70-member caucus in driving a legislative agenda that has been extremely healthy for our sector. This is only one of two caucuses in the country, and we're wow. really proud to have that great partnership. And you know, in Michigan, we've had a great relationship with government that we want to keep and we want to promote. But at the same time, we know there are times when we need to really raise our voice and be advocates for the causes we believe in, and we want to give nonprofits the tools to do it.
So what are some of the issues that you're dealing with?
Well, it's really interesting. Right now, we're challenged by not like the economy, like any other sector in Michigan. And where this really applies even greater pressure is to nonprofits that are already providing services that government has contracted with nonprofits to provide. But unfortunately, because of budget constraints and some of the revenue streams that are being realigned, as we talked about earlier, government is not, especially at the local level, been as quick to repay nonprofits for the services that they've provided. So we're seeing anywhere from 30 to 60 to 90-day delays in payments to nonprofits by local and state government for services that were already rendered. And these could be through community action agencies or healthcare providers or doing some of the greening of houses that we're seeing now with the energy funds that are being made available to a whole host of other services. And the problem that we run into as nonprofits is that we don't have large margins that we can rely on to float us through those days that we're waiting for repayment of services. And nonprofits are not able to get to the capital markets the way for-profits are. And in this market, even for-profits are having trouble getting loans. So you've got that double-edged sword where you can't borrow money, you're owed money, and yet you've got people that you're working with who are hard and dedicated workers who need to be paid every day, and services and charges for services you've already rendered. So we're really trying to work hard to get government to understand that they can't balance their books by delaying payments to nonprofits. It's just not a healthy way. We want to be great partners. The need's going to be there long after some of these nonprofits close their doors because they can't afford to stay open. And what we don't fund now and gets dismantled, we're going to have to rebuild later. So we got to find a better way to work together. Another area that we're looking at is just ensuring that nonprofits are an equal player at the table. We saw this in a surprising short-sighted action on the part of the U.S. Congress when we were going through the healthcare reform debate, where they were providing tax relief to for-profits for the healthcare individual healthcare mandates. In other words, if you're an employer, you got 10 employees, there's no restriction on you about healthcare. You get 50 employees, 25 employees, and there's a mandate that you have to provide healthcare or pay a penalty. And there was some relief provided to nonprofit employers of that size, but they didn't provide it to nonprofits because they said, well, you don't have employees.
Oh.
Right? So here we are, the third, fourth largest employer in the state of Michigan, right? And
with
Congress,
over 440,000 people employed in nonprofits.
Exactly. And Congress is saying, well, we don't get it. We don't understand what your issue is. So we had to do a lot of education very quickly to get them to understand the challenge. And finally, we did get, not at the same level as for-profits, but we did get some relief to nonprofits for the health individual healthcare mandate. So it gives you some of the examples of where we've got to be an equal player at the table working with government when policy decisions are made, because it impacts not only nonprofits and the way they do business, but the communities we serve.
So not only has a person come up with a great idea to service their community, they've created a nonprofit, they've gone through all the paperwork, now they have to be a public policy advocate on their own behalf, and on top of that, they got to worry about the IRS as well, which something just recently happened with that.
Well, welcome to the nonprofit sector, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but it's all fulfilling work. But, you know, a lot of what we're talking about with regard to how you structure a nonprofit and why you structure it this way is to ensure that we know what nonprofits are doing with their resources, that they're using them effectively and wisely, and that they're really cherishing, protecting, and honoring charitable status, which is a great honor. You know, nonprofits are provide tax relief because of the partnership they have with government in providing services, because the causes that they're involved in are not marketable in the for-profit community, and there's no paying customer, and because there is a higher role in our society for charities, and nonprofit status is a privilege, not just something we can take for granted. So while there's a great deal of scrutiny and there's a great deal of need to run at a higher standard, it all speaks well about the nonprofit sector and the way we do work. And yes, there are occasional times when there are bad actors out there that the IRS notices and really tries to make public so that it scares off other bad actors. But sometimes what happens is, rather than dealing with the bad actors, sweeping legislation is put in place that really hampers even those that are doing great work.
Do you think that when we read about it in the media, about the bad actor out there, that it help or does not help at all the confidence that people who are giving may have in organizations?
Well, you know, certainly that's anecdotally, I think that's, you know, what we've always thought. Fortunately, we've been able to say in Michigan that's not been the case. We've, over the last 7 years, conducted research and published a report every year called Giving and Volunteering in Michigan. And we've been really fortunate to see some very confident trends. One is that about 50% or, you know, half of all Michigan residents volunteer. That's a great, great asset. That amount of human capital working in communities is a great resource, and we have to make sure that we renew that every year, make sure we get young people to volunteer so that it becomes a life experience for them, and that we continually renew our thank you to those who give of their time. The second thing that we've seen is that giving is remained constant, even through the really hard economic times of 9/11, where actually giving went up, as well as right now, even though we have fewer donors, we have not dropped the level of donations that people have given. And even in the beginning of the recession, people were giving more, so that the collective amount of giving was the same, and we had fewer donors just giving more money, so the actual pool of dollars didn't go down. We will have to see how this research comes back in a couple of years to see if now we have fewer donors, even fewer donors in greater need, whether or not that's sustainable. But giving rates in general have stayed up and stayed very high, up in the 80s and 90s. And then we see a direct correlation between a volunteer and a donor, almost 99% correlation between someone who volunteers in an organization and their willingness to give financially to that organization. So if you got a volunteer, you've got a donor. And it's a great way to think about your capital, both human and financial. And then the last thing that we've tracked is trust in nonprofits and trust in charities in general. And we have seen a steady growth line, fortunately, a steady growth line over the last 7 years. You know, the trust has either gone up or maintained over the last seven-year period between individuals and communities, residents and communities, and the nonprofits they deal with. So we're very fortunate in Michigan that trust has been maintained, even when occasionally we get bad actors.
Now, government, you're going to have to forgive me here because I cannot think of exactly what it was called that I was reading about, and I believe it was on your website back in May. Was there not a situation where they were trying to limit the amount of tax-deductible donations that you could make? You guys were collecting signatures for...
Right. Charitable giving, this goes back to a number of, and it's not just this one example, but several examples where over time what we see is government trying to figure out, especially in these hard economic times, where they can find revenue. And so limiting charitable donations. And in this case, unfortunately, in several cases, we saw just recently where the federal government was trying to move or limit donations in order to pay for health care reform, for example. Mm. And we just saw any incursion or anything to dissuade people from giving to nonprofits is the wrong direction for us to go to, and especially in a government partnership where we're actually already providing services for government at a cheaper and more effective price. So we have seen a number of different challenges to charitable status of nonprofits on the part of government, because they're struggling. You know, where are they going to find the tax base to pay their bills? We're seeing now out in the Eastern Seaboard a number of states that are actually looking at repealing tax-exempt status for nonprofits, thinking that those nonprofits could pay property tax that could then go into the government coffers to provide some of their overhead costs. Here's the problem with that. The charity that they're going to tax is the one that's providing the services they used to provide at double the cost. And nonprofits are not in a position to pay property tax, especially if it's an overnight fee. And what you'll do is you'll run the nonprofit out of business, and then government is going to have to go provide the service that nonprofit was providing at twice or three times the cost. And so it really is the wrong way to think about a public-private partnership. And it's certainly very short-term, thinking about how to balance the budget. But balancing the budget on the backs of nonprofits, in the end, costs you two and three times more.
Okay, and then the IRS comes in. Going to bring them back up again, because 2010 was the first year that they started automatically revoking the tax-exempt status, correct?
That's right. And this goes back to our earlier conversation when you were asking the number of nonprofits in Michigan and the fact that there are 47,000 nonprofits registered. The process up until recently was that you stayed registered with the IRS automatically. There was, unless you revoked your own charitable status. In other words, your board dissolved, you notified the IRS, we have dissolved our corporation, our nonprofit corporation, and the IRS pulled you off the rolls. Otherwise, you stayed there. And so over the last 3 years, the IRS has taken the approach that we really need to get a better handle on the number of nonprofits, active nonprofits out there. So nonprofits that have not filed essentially their tax forms, they're called 990s, in consecutive years, were automatically revoked or pulled off the IRS scrolls. Now, here's the challenge with that. You have oftentimes nonprofits that, A, they don't know that that's something they have to do because okay. Their income stream has been so low, they think, well, I don't need to fill out a 990. Two, you've got nonprofits that were chartered as part of a group of nonprofits. In other words, a large network of scouts, for example, thought that their own scout affiliate was part of a larger nonprofit and that they didn't individually have to file, that was being handled by their state association, when in fact they were chartered as an individual nonprofit and didn't know they needed to file, so they could have been revoked. And then third, you've got the nonprofits that really just are inactive and frankly need to have the reminder that either if you're inactive, then you're automatically going to be revoked, or if you are active, you need to pay attention and get yourself current. And so they've extended the deadline, fortunately, so there are more, there's a little more time for nonprofits to get in compliance, but we see this as a very important step that we all need to take to make sure that we're protecting our charitable status. But at the same time, it was a very huge education curve for some nonprofits that we were working with. We were fortunate that we got the communication out, and a number of nonprofits thanked us for helping them understand this change in the law. But it's going to be an important education piece for all of us.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm Kristen Risbeck, your host of Impact, this public affairs talk program, where we are talking with Mr. Kyle Caldwell, who is president and CEO of the Michigan Nonprofit Association. Now, we've talked a lot about advocacy, starting a nonprofit, what's going on in the economic situation of Michigan for nonprofits. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about the Michigan Nonprofit Association and the services that you offer.
Well, we're as I mentioned earlier, we're celebrating 20 years of providing products and services to nonprofits across the state. We're a membership organization. We've over 1,000 members. Now, these are nonprofits as small as an all-volunteer organization to the large foundations in our community, including the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the Skillman Foundation and some of the other Southeast Michigan foundations. The work of M&A is to really strengthen nonprofits and the nonprofit sector generally. We focus on providing some of the products and services that we talked about. We also have a very strong, as we mentioned, public policy voice and really work to champion civic engagement at all levels. We are the only nonprofit association in the country that looks at service and volunteerism as a vital component to a healthy, strong nonprofit sector. And so we work really from early elementary and in the K-12 schools through higher education, and we have over 40 campuses across college campuses across Michigan involved with our Michigan Campus Compact that believes in service as a vital strategy for civic engagement in the education system. And we also work, as I mentioned earlier, with volunteer centers. These are organizations that work with young people and adults to match them up with nonprofits that need them. And then we're also really involved in trying to help nonprofits be more effective and more efficient. And one of those areas that we think is a really untapped resource is the use of technologies to change the way nonprofits do business. So we have a company that works with nonprofits to help them think differently about their business services, business lines, and the way they meet their customers' needs. That company is called Highway T. It's a technology company that helps nonprofits do their own organizational assessments, gets them matched up with tools and resources, and really helps them think differently about how they work. We are also involved in helping nonprofits be more effective and more efficient. We have an office in Detroit downtown, and our director there, Donna Murray Brown, is working with a number of arts and culture organizations to look at how they do strategic alliances to share services, to perhaps merge their organizations, to think about how they might actually do facilities in a different way, maybe sharing facilities and looking at brokering other services collectively as a group to share on the cost burden for providing good quality product services and events to their customers. We're looking at a whole series of different opportunities that we can help nonprofits across the state use more of our tools and resources better. And finally, you know, we are about advocating on the part of the sector. So we see ourselves as, you know, sort of the frontline collective voice for nonprofits. And much as you see other associations really pushing hard for their members, we feel it's important that we're out in front talking about the great work of the nonprofit sector in general.
And speaking of that, you have an annual nonprofit day coming up. What is that about?
Yeah, we do. Well, in once a year, we bring hundreds of nonprofit leaders from across the state together to be part of what we call Nonprofit Day, which is our day to engage policymakers, both current and future, in understanding the work of the nonprofit sector and getting a shared understanding about how we can work together. Nonprofit Day is this year is on September 21st, and it's going to be held in Lansing at the Lansing Center. And we're really excited that we're going to be able to engage after the primaries, the key candidates for the gubernatorial race and looking at the Attorney General's office, a very important partnership that we have to make sure we maintain because the Attorney General is our regulator in the state of Michigan. But also looking at bringing nonprofit leaders who are really interested in policy and talking through what are the policy implications of this wholesale turnover of legislators. You know, two-thirds of the Senate's going to turn over. Every House race is running. Many of them are competitive races. All the constitutional officers are running for office, Secretary of State, Governor, Attorney General. All of this change is going to come upon us, and we are going to use Nonprofit Day to help nonprofits navigate that change.
So this is a huge year, huge election year for nonprofits to partake and to participate in this.
Absolutely. And in addition to Nonprofit Day, we've launched a program that's called the Michigan Participation Project, and it's an online series of tools that people can use to do voter engagement. We think that in addition to being great advocates for their organizations, nonprofits need to be in the role of really promoting civic engagement in their local community because informed voters lead to informed policymakers that lead to great decisions that impact nonprofits positively. And so the Michigan Participation Project provides tools that nonprofits can put up in their own organization to help people figure out how to register to vote, what the ballot looks like, what are the issues, perhaps, and then any local forums that might be open to them to really get out in front of their elected officials and those who are running for office. So there's a lot of really important decisions that are going to be made in this election that we think it's important for nonprofits to be at the table for.
So not only are you involved in everything we have talked about over this last 15 minutes here, but you guys also have on a regular basis, and quite a few of them, different classes that people can take that are involved with nonprofits. For example, you've got serving on a nonprofit board coming up, or just, oh, that's today. And the anatomy of an online fundraiser, training a nonprofit board, leadership skills for the experienced leader. I mean, you guys have a lot of resources for nonprofits.
Absolutely. And this is because we've got great partnerships at the regional and local level. All the offerings that we have posted on our events bulletin board are all events either that we run directly or that we're running through local management service organizations. And these are nonprofits that serve the management needs of other nonprofits. Much in the way you see the Small Business Administration helping for-profit entities, we've got great partnerships all over the state that allow us to provide a whole suite of services either around board development, fundraising, HR management, IT, finance, you name it. We've got the tools that we can provide nonprofits to be more effective and more efficient. And it's because of M&A's reach and great, strong local partnerships that we're able to really have a very robust training and development program for our state.
Do you have anything else that you would like to talk about? By all means, I want you to once again give any information out there that people can contact you, the website, all that. But is there any other issue that I may not have covered here that you wanted to give a shout out at the end of the show?
Well, you know, there's just so much that the nonprofit sector does, and we're so fortunate in Michigan that we've got a great, robust sector, as we talked about. You know, the third largest employer, 1 in 10 Michigan workers work for a nonprofit. We've got great partnerships with government that we've got to make sure we maintain. All of those things are true, but we've also not talked about one very important partner, and that is grant-making organizations.
Mm.
And Michigan is very fortunate to have some very large, strong foundations in our state that have been tremendous supporters and helped not only create a robust sector, but a really healthy communities. So whether we're talking about the Kresge Foundation or the C.S. Mott Foundation or the Kellogg Foundation or local community foundations that cover every single community in Michigan, every county in Michigan has access to the resources of a community foundation. And many of those have young people who are actual grant makers who they themselves make decisions on where those grants go. All of that comes together in a really robust tapestry in Michigan that we call the philanthropic sector. And we're very fortunate in Michigan to have both the grant makers and grant seekers come to the table all the time to make key decisions and work together in partnership. It's not just about transferring of money from one organization to another. It's really about working together to build a strong nonprofit and a community and strong Michigan that we're so blessed for. So I hope people recognize that. And I hope people also go to our website at MNAOnline.org. and see some of the tools that we have. And then also, if you're a nonprofit and you want to tell your story, under our Nonprofit Resources Center, we have a great place for people to fill in their story called our Story Bank that we use to really talk about the impact of the nonprofit sector. So there's an easy online tool. You go in, you identify your organization, quick prompts to tell you how to tell your story, and then that story goes statewide or nationwide, depending on some of the issues that we're dealing with. And we're just really delighted to be able to be here to tell nonprofits' story and also to be a vital component in Michigan's economy and hopefully a vital resource for our economic recovery.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Kyle Caldwell here with the Michigan Nonprofit Association. I really appreciate you participating here on Impact Today, and I definitely hope that people who may be listening out there, you know, find this very helpful and contact you.
Great. Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
This has been the July edition of Impact, which is a public affairs talk program that covers nonprofit organizations, events, and people who are trying to change the community and the world. My name is Kristen Risbeck. I've been your host for this hour, and I really hope that you will join me next month, August 24th, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., when I will be interviewing Friends of Belle Isle and what they have going on here in the Metro Detroit area. They have an event that will be coming up at the end of August called Come Here, Belle Isle. They are trying to save Belle Isle, and they have a very active group within their community. So I really hope you join me then, and thank you so much for listening. This is Impact, and thank you, the Michigan Nonprofit Association, for participating. You are definitely making an impact in the nonprofit world of today. Have a great week. Have a great month. I'll be back at the end of August, August 24th.
Jeff, host of One Chord to Another, a new show Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. on WHFR. Join me every Tuesday in enjoying national and local indie rock and pop, especially pop, from great artists you know and love, plus some artists you might not have heard of. So if you're looking to get your indie rock and pop fix, look no further. Join me every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m. for One Chord to Another on the only station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM.
Hey, you.
Yeah, you.
Did you know that you can register right now for fall classes at Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn? Get a jump start on your education. Don't wait. Visit hfcc.edu to register today.
Stroll through the wonderful atmosphere of the West Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market and pick up some delicious, fresh, and local seasonal produce, or delight your taste buds with some gourmet jams and specialty baked goods. Decorate your home with beautiful baskets, bright flowers, and gardening decor from community artists. The West Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market is sponsored by Henry Ford Community College and the City of Dearborn every Friday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. behind the Bryant Branch Library at the corner of Michigan Avenue and Mason Street. Get everything you need for a great weekend at the West Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market and make it a Friday tradition.
Every day, you can help good things happen. Claudia, a local health worker in Nicaragua, helps save 6 children from pneumonia. Rosina in Bangladesh helps save 10 children from diarrhea. Aster in Ethiopia helps save 20 from malaria. And Salif in Mali helps save 30 from the effects of malnutrition. Help one, save many. Visit goodgoes.org to find all the ways you can help the good go further. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
I'm trying to use the phone!
Hey, loyal listener, call WHFR at 313-845-9676 or toll free at 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
What? I couldn't hear that last part!
That's 845-9676 or toll free 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have sent children into fits of rage.
I am responsible for a child's speech impediment.
I am the reason a child can't read.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill from I Fight Dragons, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm Jeff, and you are listening to One Chord to Another, which happens every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m., playing indie rock and pop, slightly used indie rock and pop sometimes, but it's all really good, great stuff, like this song you're hearing right now. This is Sloan off of their album One Chord to Another, where I get the name of the show from, and they actually mention the name of the show in this song, so that's why I chose it for my opening, and it's a really great song. I just kind of was listening to it the other day, actually, and I've listened to it a million times. And-